I turn to rush back into the cellar and burrow whimpering into the straw. But it was too late. They'd seen me. They hadn't exactly been chatty before. Now they fell utterly silent as they leaned on their bicycles, no penny farthings among them, thank goodness, and stared with evil interest at my polished buttons and spotless British warm. They looked as if they'd already been warned about me. Their silence was worse than the barrage that had kept me awake until 2 in the morning. They didn't even snigger. The cynical silence went on and on, right up to the appearance of Captain Craig and his sergeant, the latter riding a sawed-off tandem bicycle that some mechanical genius had attached to a cart. Piled on the cart were trenching tools, haversacks, rations, and a positively frightening amount of ammunition. Craig leaped off his bike and picked up a spare Lewis gun and strode up to me happily, saying, "Ah, you're coming, are you? Good." But then he frowned, staring at my luggage. Beside the 2 valises, I had a haversack, a small suitcase, and a sleeping bag. "What's this?" he said. "You can't take all this."
"It's valuable stuff."
"I dare say it is, but we have to travel light. A moment's thought would have told you that."
"Christ almighty," the sergeant said.
I looked at him haughtily.
"I don't approve of blasphemous language," I told him.
One of the soldiers fell off his bicycle. "You can put your haversack and bedroll in the cart, Bandy, and that's it. We've no room for anything else," Craig said.
"Sorry. War is hell, I know."
Knowing from experience what the little luxuries meant at the front, I had ransacked Fortnum & Mason's and the best-stocked liquor store in the West End just before setting out. I had been intending to hand out the goodies forthwith, but now I decided that this was not the right time to offer them. So I just said, "All right, I'll be back in 2 ticks. The sergeant said something, and a rumble of laughter followed me into the hotel. I managed to wake Hilchison and persuade him to look after the valises until I got back. If I didn't claim them, within 5 days, the lifespan of the ham, he was to distribute the contents as he saw fit. The 40 thieves were already moving off when I came out again. They had left me a lady's bike. At least, I think it was a bike. It was slouching against the wall of the hotel, a chipped, rusting, mud-spattered monster with 2 huge pneumatic-tired wheels, handlebars that looked as if they'd been loaned by a battle-scarred buffalo, and a saddle that somebody had been gnawing at hungrily. The dreadful contraption was also suffering from curvature of the spine, and one of the pedals was missing. However, there was no time for fastidiousness. The rest of the company had already disappeared into the silent but decidedly unholy night. Resting on the saddle was a Lewis gun with a strap clipped to it. I slung its not inconsiderable weight over my shoulder, climbed aboard, and pushed off manfully. I had traveled 60 yards in the wrong direction before I had the thing more or less under control. Wobbling like mad, I turned on a reciprocal heading and pedaled after the rest of them furiously. Just as I was catching up with the tail end Charlie, the front wheel bumped into a section of the road from which somebody had borrowed several cobbles. As I went down, there was such a display of sparks that I half expected somebody to lean out of an upstairs window and holler angrily about the blackout. I managed to catch up again about 1/2 mile farther on. We headed due east along the Somme River, down which a wrinkled moon was floating. For the first hour, the pavé was deserted, except for one alarming moment when an armored car howled past at nearly 20 miles an hour. I didn't see it until it was almost on me. My bike went flying off the road. I was still trying to clutch at the non-existent brakes, fingers wiggling wildly in the moonlight, as it sailed into a field and fell neatly onto a cowpat. So much for my new coat.